The Big Scary Show is brought to you in part by Dark Imaginings, web design, creepy changing portraits, and much, much more. DarkImaginings.com.
For the deepest, darkest crypts, to the backwoods swamp where you hit the bottom, from the inside of your casket to the fears lodged deep inside your subconscious, it's time for the Big Scary Show.
This is Leonard Pickle with Entrepreneurs, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
This is Keith Kaminsky from Busch Gardens, Tampa, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
This is Greg Allen from Anderson Farms, Terror in the Corn in Erie, Colorado, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hey, this is Ben DeWitt from Busch Gardens Hallow Scream in Tampa, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hello, creeps. It's me, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to The Big Scary Show, the top podcast in the industry.
Hi, this is Sandra Hughes from Fright Maze Productions Haunted Attraction in Merritt Island, Florida. You are listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hi, this is Mercedes Casey from Legoland Florida Resort in Winter Haven, Florida, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
Hey, this is Daryl Kirby from Kirby Family Farms Lost Railroad in Williston, Florida, and you're listening to The Big Scary Show.
You're listening to The Big Scary Show with three big scary men and one that wears more makeup than I do.
And welcome to Big Scary Show, episode 163, The Evil Big Scary Show Tiki Beach Party! Yay! For the Tiki Beach Party lineup, we have Badger bringing you all the deadline news as an appetizer to get you going. He'll also be at SeaHack down in Florida, talking to some of the bigs in the haunted attraction industry and finding out what's coming on for this season. He'll be talking to Fright Maze, Howl-O-Scream, Kirby Farms, Legoland, The Lost Railroad, Steve Vaughn, Robbie LaPree, and more. And you'll have a special appearance by our super special, extra special correspondent, Tater. Meat Hook Jim is back with Between the Corpses. Find out what insights he has for you before you hit the waves on the boards. Haunt Minute gets you in between that beach volleyball game and the super tiki drinks from the bar as we're going to talk what's in the tomb. Jerry has all the great tiki beach haunted music going on, none of it which will be tiki for the show, but hey, we're having fun here at the Big Scary Show Tiki Beach Bash, and Jerry's got the fun going on. But the big feature, the big luau portion, the Round Table of Terror. And it's back from its own summer vacation with Scenic Design, where the hosts will be talking with Leonard Pickle, Craig Allen from Terror in the Corn, and Keith Kaminsky from Howl-O-Scream, as we talk all things scenic design, what to do, how to plan, and even a little bit about what you can do with your actors and your scenes. We've got a gruesome giveaway and so much more fun, games, and adventure at the Big Scary Show, episode 163, Tiki Beach Party.
Hello everyone, Drew Badger here. We are live in Ocala, Florida at the Southeastern Halloween Enthusiast Conference, otherwise known as SeaHeck. We're talking to a lot of interesting people out here, and, you know, there's a lot of theme parks that are being represented out here. There was a theme park panel earlier talking about Halloween events. Got somebody sitting next to me now, Dylan Colath, who's an associate designer at Universal Studios and their Halloween Horror Nights. Halloween Horror Nights is always big in our news. They send us lots of information and lots of cool things going on. Dylan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're hanging in there. So what are some of the big things that that you do with Halloween Horror Nights?
So being an associate designer, I basically get to have my hand on anything that deals with the scenic development of the event. Basic technical drawings, construction drawings, scenic drawings, graphic design, color elevations, anything that that pretty much would take to get that maze to the final build product that they need me to help on.
And one of the things that Halloween Horror Nights is famous for are when they make their announcements, you know, it might be a Stranger Things maze coming through, or it might be an It maze coming through this year, or it might be, you know, Killer Clowns from Outer Space or some kind of iconic movie character. Do you have to be, you know, spot on design-wise based on that? Does the studio give you a set of specs to say, if we're going to build a Stranger Things haunt, here's what you got to have in it, here's what you can't have in it?
So when we're dealing with properties like that, we like to make sure it's as close to the product as possible, because that's what the guests are coming and really wanting to expect. They're wanting to see what they've basically already experienced brought to life. So, yeah, what we have to do is just make sure that it's matched as close as possible to that.
You don't get those people saying, oh, man, that didn't look anything like that, or this was really, really cool, spot on.
Not so much. It's basically, you know, an experience as a whole. Mm-hmm. We get the guests that come through, and so I get to hear like different comments of, you know, them, what they expected for the maze, and then what they thought of after the maze was.
How much of creative freedom do you get on a house that may not be based on a particular movie or TV show?
So like our original ideas? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the original ideas are great because they're our own stories. So it's basically whatever that we can come up with that we think would tell a great story and the guests would really enjoy and would be really scary. So I love working on the originals because it's so fun to try and come up with something brand new and try and come up with something that you think is really going to get a great response out of people and that they're going to really enjoy and hopefully, you know, want to see more of.
No chainsaws, right?
Yeah, chainsaws, that's mostly for the streets.
I have a thing with chainsaws, but that's cool too. But yeah, it sounds like it's just an interesting thing, you know, the fact that, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of people come through and see something that you have created or have helped design in anything. That's got to be a really cool thing. Anything really cool coming down the pike that they haven't announced yet that you can break on live on our show here?
I can't. I can't talk about anything that hasn't been announced yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what specifically will you have a hand in designing for this year?
So this year, most of the houses I've been working heavily on getting construction drawings out, getting the packages completed so that they can go and be built and hopefully look the way that the design team wanted them to look. So it's just getting multiple packages out there and getting that to the teams that, because we have so many different teams that will work on the event, like our lighting team and our special effects team. So it's getting all of that information out there and easily accessible so that, because I start and I'll do the basic construction drawings, and then the next team that needs those because they need to know where to hang the drapes and to put the lights and to do all that. So it's making sure that all of that is taken into account and is offered in a way that it's easily available to those teams to then go on and produce the next step of the house.
Nice. It sounds like you're, you know, an integral cog in this giant wheel that is theme park design, especially for something on the scale of a Universal. For people wanting more information about Universal, for tickets and things like that, do you know of websites or social medias where people can get that information?
Yeah, I believe if you go to HalloweenHorrorNights.com, it's got all the information that you need for all of that.
Fantastic. So HalloweenHorrorNights.com. Any final words on set design? I mean, we're standing across from a facade right here that was built by, I believe, a home hunter or something like that. What are your opinions on something like this?
Oh, yeah. It all fascinates me. I love it. I'm a big architecture fan. So the thing I love about the haunt industry is, be it whatever story you're trying to tell, you get to do so many different architectural styles. Whereas if right now we're looking at a big mausoleum and it's got a collection of different shapes and different textures. And that's what I love about haunts, is you get something really nasty and really grungy. And you can go into a bedroom and it looks nice and pretty, but then somebody terrifying comes out of it. So you get to really experiment with all sorts of different styles and different ways of working a scare and of making something look convincing, but it's actually, just plywood and scenic mud.
You'd never think that's what that was, but it was really cool. It is, as I said, a four-person mausoleum here, and it is pretty cool. So once again, go to HalloweenHorrorNights.com. Check out all of that. I know they've made some announcements. I'm sure they'll be making a few more there. Dylan Koloth, it's been a pleasure to have you here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Once again, Drew Badger down here in Ocala, Florida at CHEC, and we are out.
Want to take your haunt to a new dimension of terror? Then let Dark Imaginings conjure up some ghoulish graphics and web design services for your home, haunt, or crypt. Since 2007, professional and home haunters alike have trusted our award-winning and dedicated skeleton crew to make their nightmares come true. Whether you need graphic design services, logos, websites, spooky visuals, or creepy changing portraits, we can help your business look its scary best. To see more of our products and services, drop by darkimaginings.com. Let us help you get ahead of your competition.
Hey, it's Super Special Correspondent Tater with my cape and special helmet, and we're at Hot Wire Foam Factory. Hi, guys. How are you?
Great, Tater. How are you doing today?
Good. Hey, check this out. I used some of your tools, which are amazing. Love them.
Thank you.
And look what I created here.
Oh, my God. Did you hurt yourself?
No, isn't it awesome?
I think maybe you should stick with fog.
Why are you saying that?
I don't know, Tater. That looks like you could have hurt yourself doing that.
So you're saying I'm not good at this?
No, but you're great at fog.
Oh, nuts. All right. Well, I guess I'm going to try something my talent in someplace else then.
Okay.
Thanks, Hotwire Foam Factory.
You are welcome, Tater.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time for Deadline News here on The Big Scary Show with your host, me, Drew Badger, bringing you all the latest in the haunted house, Halloween, and horror industries. Hello, everyone. Drew Badger here. This is Deadline News for episode 163, and we're going to start off with news on our 3900th like on Facebook. The Big Scary Show would like to congratulate Don Rogers of Philadelphia for being our 3900th like on Facebook. Remember, folks, for every 100th like, we'll give you a shout-out. So thanks again, Don. Keep listening, and please tell your friends and family to tune in, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. We have this update to Spooky Empire coming to Orlando, Florida. Her roles run the range from a bubbly, cheerful nun to an evil queen and everything in between, but Kathy Najimy is best known to us as the quirky witch Mary Sanderson in the cult Halloween film Hocus Pocus. We're celebrating 25 years of Hocus Pocus this year, and we're thrilled to have Kathy Najimy at Spooky Empire this October 26th through the 28th, along with some other wicked surprises. Kathy Najimy has starred in numerous films and TV, including Sister Act, Bride of Chucky, Descendants, Descendants 2, Younger, Veep, and many, many more. She's also known for her voiceovers in many animated series, including BoJack Horseman, King of the Hill, WALL-E, and many more. Tickets are on sale now at SpookyEmpire.com. Plus, get your VIP packages. Rooms are available and moving quickly at the Caribe Royal Orlando. This is the year you don't want to miss. Get all the information at SpookyEmpire.com. We have this hiring news from the Baxter Avenue Morgue in Louisville, Kentucky. Character auditions will be held August 4th from 2 to 6 p.m. This is your chance to deliver terrifying nightmares to thousands of frightened people this fall. Entertain outside crowds or take part in one of the many other positions inside the morgue. Apply for simple volunteer positions up to the more serious paid acting positions. If you've never acted in your life or think it would be fun to try, now is the time. Everyone that gets accepted will attend the Baxter Avenue Morgue Scare Tactics class for tips on scaring, makeup, and costumes. So come see what it's all about on August 4th. Get more information at their Facebook page, facebook.com/BaxterAveAVE Morgue. We have this news from Stillwell Manor in Anderson, Indiana. Do you like to scare? Why not join the Stillwell Manor team and make a little money while having an experience you'll never forget? Apply at stillwellmanor.hauntscheduler.com. Pick up one of the two audition dates and we'll get you scheduled. Any questions, feel free to contact us via Facebook Messenger or info@stillwellmanor.com. Get more information at stillwellmanor.com. We have this news from the Hayride of Horror in Lockport, Illinois. The Hayride of Horror, with the new edition of The Curse of the Bayou, is looking for actors for paid and volunteer positions for this Halloween season. Actors, experienced and non-experienced, should pick one of the dates offered, August 21st or 28th. All beginners are welcome. See the Hayride of Horror Facebook page for more information and message us if you have any particular questions. There will be a few workshops and rehearsals at Delwood Park before performances on every Friday and Saturday in October, weather pending. Actors are required to be at Delwood Park for performances around 3:30 p.m. until released at about 11 p.m. Get more information at that Facebook page, facebook.com/PG/Hayride of Horror. We have this update from the 715 Haunt in Canton, Massachusetts. Friends, fans, and future victims of the 715, or 715, I don't know, sorry. It has been a while since we've updated you, so here it is. We've been in the process of extending a deal to move our current location to a new home. At this time, we have extended the deal to keep us in the Village Hops at Cobb's Corner for one more year. We're still in the process of making changes, but our nightmare is now 100% confirmed to remain at the Village Shops for the 2018 season. We are excited to see you all again. Let's make this year one to remember. Sweet dreams. Keep up with the latest news at their Facebook page, facebook.com/the715. And finally, we have this early holiday news from Krampus, Los Angeles. Have you ever wanted to experience an actual European Krampuslauf? Oh God, yes. This winter, from November 30th through December 7th, I, your group admin, Krampus LA's Al Ridenour, will be hosting Geek Nation Tours Christmas with the Krampus trip to Austria and Bavaria, where you can encounter not dozens, but hundreds of the beasts in authentic costumes. I'll be sharing Krampus lore from my book, The Krampus and the Old Dark Christmas, throughout the tour. We'll be hitting two big Krampus runs in Salzburg and Graz, as well as visiting other sites with the sort of darker, offbeat apparel that Krampus fans are sure to savor. Other highlights include Vienna, The Anatomical Pathological Museum housed in the Madhouse Tower, the former asylum. The semi-abandoned, gothically overgrown St. Mark's Cemetery, where Mozart is interred. And Salzburg, Mountains and Mythology Tour and Hidden Corners Tour of the 12th century Hohensalzburg Fortress, accessing parts of the castle not normally visited. Munich, the famous bejeweled skeleton of St. Munditia in the St. Peter's Church. And Berchtesgaden, the world's oldest functioning salt mine tour, including a boat trip across the underground salt lake. There will be plenty of unscheduled time for planning your own afternoon excursions. Get more information at KrampusLosAngeles.com or GeekNationTours.com and look for Christmas with the Krampus. Now that sounds like a lot of fun. And remember, folks, you can find out about all the haunted attractions listed on Deadline News or the Big Scary News by going to FindAHaunt.com. That's FindAHaunt.com. Remember, folks, if you have news in the haunted house, Halloween, or horror industries, and you want it on the show, email it to us, news@bigscaryshow.com, and we'll get it on the show. No news is too big or too small. This concludes this edition of the Big Scary Show's Deadline News.
Are you afraid this haunt season? Afraid of long lines of dissatisfied customers just at your ticket booth? Afraid of all the processing fees and hassle with credit cards? Are you afraid to make that jump into online ticketing? Well, take the leap. Ticket Leap. Ticket Leap will give you online options for your customer. Beautiful event pages to give every single ticketing option you have now and loads of possibility. Smart tools to spread the word, engage with your customers, and connect to social media with great, simple payment processing and the friendly customer support to go with it. Do things you haven't dreamed of. Hey, what's a selfie ticket? Check out TicketLeap.com. They're going to show you what to do. And no haunt's too big or too small for them to process. You're going to have a beautiful event page, even if you have a home haunt. Hey, they have options for free events that you may have. And what better way to collect donations for a community? Tickets under $5. The fee's only 25 cents. Find out what TicketLeap has to offer to you. TicketLeap.com.
Shadow Symphony. The dead are watching on the Big Scary Show.
Hello, everyone. Drew Badger here. We are live at SeaHack, the Southeast Halloween Enthusiast Conference down in Ocala, Florida. And we're having a good time. We're talking to all the cool kids, all the vendors, and all this stuff. And you know, Florida is known for one thing in Halloween. That's the big theme parks. You know, you got the Mouse, you got Harry Potter, you got all this other stuff. But down in Tampa, you've got Busch Gardens Halloscream, an excellent one going into their 19th year. We got Ben DeWitt here. How you doing, sir?
Not bad. How about you?
Not too bad. We're having a good time talking with folks. Tell us about Busch Gardens Halloscream for 2018. What's new? What's not new? What's gone? What's back? And all this cool stuff.
All right. Well, I will tell you everything I can. We haven't released everything. Obviously, we got to...
Obviously, we haven't reported it yet, but, you know, we'll make sure we're on your mailing list. But anyway.
Absolutely. So there's definitely a team of people way smarter than me that's determining our PR strategy, but I'm happy to share with you the things that we've released so far. So far, we've talked about a couple of returning haunted houses. Guest favorite, Deathwater Bayou is back, and the other thing that we have confirmed, that zombie containment unit is gone, and that's going to be a new haunted house in 2018. We haven't released the name or content of that yet, but I promise it's going to be scary and exciting. But, you know, for us, haunted house is obviously a huge part of Halloween, but we're in a very fortunate position in a theme park to just have so much atmosphere and so many streets available to us, and roller coasters and restaurants and shows, that we're really taking a stab at reimagining the personality of all those things. So what you're going to see that's most exciting at Halloscream this year, I think, are what we're doing out on the streets in our immersive realms and scare zones that are essentially outdoor haunted houses.
Now, when we talk Busch Gardens, you know, there's more than one Busch Gardens. There's Williamsburg, there's Tampa, there's others that I can't remember at the moment. Do you all get, does corporate send you something saying, here's what's going to happen this year, here's not what's going to happen, or do you vary it? I mean, does, if I go to Williamsburg and if I go to Tampa, am I going to see the same things?
No, great question. The only thing we get from corporate are our guest satisfaction results. That's where we get that, and Facebook are where we get that information, but we don't get direction from corporate. What they do is help us collaborate with other parks to make sure that we're not duplicating too much, or if we do duplicate something, it's intentional, and it's something that we know would work for both audiences. So really, they're just a bridge between us and the other parks. So SeaWorld San Antonio also does Halloscream. They're part of our system, so we're in constant collaboration, constant talks throughout the year.
Do they send you haunts and you send them haunts after X amount of time?
Quite literally. We had a haunted house that was in a non-permanent venue, a venue that we have to share with another event, boxed up into semi-trailers that we just shipped over to one of our sister parks. Oh, nice. That they're going to reassemble and put up in one of their buildings, which is super cool. So, yeah, we share a lot. We share props and pieces, and not just for the Halloween event, right? We'll share from shows that a cool piece from a show that may be going away, we'll share that stuff a lot. So it's collaboration. It's a bit of competition with each other.
Well, I cut my teeth on theme parks. I was an actor there for many years. I worked with Carowinds and their Scarowinds thing, which was a Paramount park, and now it's a Cedar Point or Cedar Fair park. So, you know, for those people who have never been to a theme park's Halloween event, it's quite different from going to your local mom and pop trail or local big haunted house.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously, there's a difference in resources. We've got a huge company backing us financially, so we're able to, you know, I hire almost 800 actors and spend a lot of money on just the paint and special effects and just props and cool masks. And so there's a huge advantage there. The other cool thing about coming to a theme park is that there's such a variety in product where, you know, if you do 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 haunted houses, each one of them can tell its own story, can be its own genre that you might find especially scary, or you might go through one that you don't think is that concept to you is not terrifying, but it's fun for you to watch somebody else go through it, watch a stranger go through it. So there are some differences.
And the roller coasters.
Oh, yeah. The roller coasters are a huge hit. And one thing that we've done lately is we haunt the roller coasters now. We didn't do that for a while. So, yeah, so if you go in a group of three, or you're a single rider because your friend is too scared to dive on Sheikra in the dark, right? Mm-hmm. What will likely happen is just before they drop those shoulder harnesses down, a zombie's going to jump on the coaster with you. So that'll be a good picture when that shows up later.
Sure.
Yeah, there's the concept of no place safe is big with us from the moment you park in the parking lot, you know, then you get on the trams. If you've ever come to the park, or really any theme park where you ride to the the front gate, the front entrance. We've haunted every corner of it. So,
well, it sounds like it's going to be a great show again this year. Question that I had for people down in the Florida area here: how much would you say of the attendance at Hallow Scream is Florida versus people coming from other states? I mean, you know, let's face it, you're in the middle of a huge tourist destination. Oh, yeah. So, you know, do you get feedback saying, hey, I came from New York, I came from Pennsylvania, I came from Alaska, wherever, and, you know, had a good time? Or would you say 90% is local or 50% is local or what?
You know, if our surveys are accurate, we're looking at 60% local and overnight drives. Wow. 60 to 70%, and that's really state of Florida. Somebody coming down, driving down, getting a hotel, coming back the next morning. That's a specific audience for us. And, of course, also, right, like you said, Central Florida is huge. So a lot of folks that normally would not have come over from Orlando do, just to visit that. So that's your day drive. But we have a strong, very dedicated local following just in our surrounding zip codes of people that like to come in multiple times. But then, you know, it's great to hear what they have to say. And once we're compared to something in their hometown, in Alaska, we have there's a particular couple that comes over from England every single year. They've got our email address. We get an email from them saying, hey, we're on the way. We'll see you soon. We're getting on the plane. So there's international guests, but there's also a strong local following as well.
For people wanting more information about Busch Gardens Hallow Scream in Tampa for this year, all the new stuff, all the cool things that are happening, or maybe Busch Gardens in general, whether you're going to the other parks or, you know, primarily Tampa since we're down here, how can they get more information, websites, social medias, keep up with all the latest news?
Hallowscream.com is the hugest one. That's where you're going to have the most updated information. It's where our ticket prices are. And right now, I mean, they'll never be less expensive than they are right now. I think it's like $30 to get a ticket right now. But social media is where you're going to see it first. We're very, very active on Instagram and Facebook, Snapchat, Hallow Scream. You follow any one of those, follow Hallow Scream, and you'll see the coolest, newest stuff there first.
Excellent. And, of course, whenever you do announce that stuff, we do hope to put it out here on the Big Scary Show. So, once again, check out hallowscream.com. Ben DeWitt, a pleasure to have you here at CHEC in Ocala. My name is Drew Badger for the Big Scary Show. And we're out.
Ready to dress up your show? Need to pump new life into old props? Just want to show something no one else has? Do what Alice Cooper, Distortions Unlimited, and A-list haunters all over the world do. Wear Bunkerum. Durable, handcrafted, dependable year after year. Bunkerum. When you scare enough to wear the very best. Voncharon.com. VONCHARON.com.
Hey, it's Super Special Correspondent Tater again, and here I'm with Missing Finger Productions. Right? Missing Finger Productions.
Yes.
Kevin, look at this sweet mask I just made.
That is absolute trash. It's terrible. Yes.
What do you mean? It's great. Look at it. It's got horns?
No, it's terrible.
So you're saying I shouldn't go into mask making either?
No. You could be an ankle model.
Well, I guess I'm not going to cut out for mask making. I guess I would try my hand someplace else. But
no, but you could sell me that mask you made, and then, like, you know, I'll totally do something with it. Like, say I did it.
But you said it was garbage.
Oh, it's absolute trash, but, you know, I'll take it from you.
But you have sweet masks. You don't want my garbage mask.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, if you don't want it, I'll take it, and then I'll say that I did it.
I don't want you to take that credit. You know, I don't want you to ruin your reputation.
No, it's fine. I have no reputation. You do have sweet ankles.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Broadcasting to you from the darkest reaches of the earth, this is A Haunt Minute. And now, with this week's commentary, Storm.
Alright, so we get inspiration for what we're going to do from many different places. Movies, things growing up, other haunters, you know, just sometimes the materials we're working with. But one of the best places to get your inspiration is the real world, and to have your haunt scenes and your haunts ripped from the headlines. And boy, oh doozy, do we have a headline this week. Yes, over on the other side of the world, underneath ancient Alexandria, they have found a tomb. You know, just normal digging, burying, hey, we gotta build something here, and, oh, ruins of the old city, and we have found a giant black stone sarcophagus. And when we mean giant, we mean 9 feet by 6 feet. Massive, huge thing, and there's like a old weathered bust that was with it and stuff too. So, you know, most of the world, it goes, ooh, somebody important was probably in here, some, you know, great leader or something, maybe even Alexander the Great. Ooh, yay, how great. Yeah, but the rest of us have seen this movie. We know how this happens. You crack that puppy open, and they plan to. Yeah, the beetles come out, and people's eyeballs start melting. Horrible, horrible things just come out of giant black sarcophaguses that have been buried in the desert and forgotten for 2,000 years. No good can come of that, except your hauntspiration, your planning. You know, if you've got anything Egyptian or themed or anything sitting around, start working on that 6-foot by 9-foot giant black sarcophagus and everything you can imagine coming out of it. Spiders, snakes, chupacabras, anything. Zombies, mummies, mummy zombies, all kinds of fun stuff. Because ripped right from the headlines, how can it be any better? And, you know, just the imagination of, you know, right now, everybody listening to this has an idea of what awful, horrible thing could be coming out of that sarcophagus. You know, some of us, our first thought is like Apocalypse from the X-Men. Our people are like, oh yeah, mummy, just like the movie, it's going to be great. Hope The Rock isn't in the next cave over as some half-man, half-CGI, half-scorpion thing, you know, the, you know, three halves of a whole Scorpion King. But we're completely getting off tangent because, you know, get your haunt plans done because the world's probably going to end when they crack that puppy open. So go through the papers or, you know, pull it up on your smartphones because nobody reads the paper anymore, which is fine. And, you know, forget all the other boring news and stuff, but look for those headlines to rip and put right into your haunt. And until next time, keep every minute scary.
Tune in next episode for another Haunt Minute. And in the meantime, share your opinions on the Big Scary Show Facebook page and on Twitter at Big Scary Storm.
Hi, this is Josh Gates from Travel Channel's Expedition Unknown, reminding you to send all hate mail to storm@bigscaryshow.com.
Out of the darkness of the ancient past, out of the dust of centuries and the inscrutable silence of the unknown, come two new adventures in shock and suspense on one sensational motion picture program.
The Mummy.
Plus Curse of the Undead.
Fear will freeze you when you face The Mummy.
It tears steel bars like paper.
It snaps men's spines like matchsticks.
It walks through bullets like a ghost. Awakened from the darkest tomb of the pharaohs, it stalks the earth with strangely human desires.
The Mummy.
And on the same program, Curse of the Undead.
The haunting story of a faceless fiend who drained the young and beautiful of life.
Together on one program, Curse of the Undead, and in chilling technicolor,
The Mummy.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. The Roundtable of Terror has been on a little bit of a summer vacation. The table's been highly polished up by our Amish friends here, and it is so glowing. You can wash your face. So fantastic. Thank you very much to the Amish for that.
But, you know, we've been talking a little bit over the last few weeks about, you know, build season. Everyone's getting their stuff done. Everyone's looking at hiring actors and painting and building and setting up and everything. But, you know, what makes a good haunted house? It's a question that, you know, many, many different answers to. What somebody likes, somebody else may hate. But one thing you really got to have is a pretty decent set design or plan layout, or try to figure out, you know, just how you're going to convert that 8,000 square foot, 20,000, 50,000 square foot building into something that's going to cause violent expulsions of bodily fluids out of various customers' bodies next season or however many years you stay in business. So we thought we'd talk to some set designers, some scenic designers, about how they design their stuff, how they theme their things, how it works, what doesn't work, maybe some cool stories about things that have worked or not. And we got a really good doozy of a guest with us this time. First of all, we want to thank way down in Erie, Colorado, Greg Allen, who's with Terror in the Corn. Greg, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Great. Glad to have you with us. We have all the way out on the West Coast in Los Angeles, Keith Kaminsky, who has worked for Hollow Scream in Tampa, Florida for a great number of years, but is residing currently in Los Angeles. Keith, are you with us?
I am, sir. Hello, everybody.
Great to have you here. And, of course, frequent guest, normally talking about his convention, HauntCon, but is not talking HauntCon today, talking about set design, none other than down in Orlando, Florida, fresh out of visiting and attending CPEC, Mr. Leonard Pickle. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you. And also, our co-hosts, including Storm up in Rhode Island.
Greetings from the 41st parallel. Well, I'm sad that our fine Amish craftsmen who, you know, did such good work on our round table will never hear this.
You know the irony of that? That's absolutely true. Down in Cincinnati, Meat Hook Jim.
But this table is so beautiful you could put a fresh corpse on it, laid out nicely.
I like the way you think, sir. Unfortunately, the instrumentalist Jerry Vane in Columbus, Ohio is unavailable tonight. So we will be traveling without him through the world of set design. My name is Drew Badger. Normally in Charlotte, I too am coming back from CHEC, so I'm sitting in a hotel room in Valdosta, Georgia, with a drink next to me, air conditioning running, and a big storm approaching. So let's talk set design. Let's start with you, Keith. You're a, from what I understand, a freelance haunter, set designer type person, but you have been working with Hollow Scream for a long, long time. Is that correct?
Yes, I have. I've designed over 50 haunted mazes, attractions, and shows. I've been with Busch Gardens now. I just finished the design for my 14th year with them. They typically do two new houses each year, and they'll pick two that are the least popular to retire those two. And so that's on my yearly schedule.
Very nice. How about you, Greg? How long have you been doing this?
I started as a home haunter back in 1996, and I opened up Fear Fest Haunted House in Columbia, Missouri back in 2003. I sold it in 2015 and moved to Colorado and assisted with this one here, and we basically took it over. And I'm now the evening events coordinator out here. I take care of everything that has to do when the lights go out. We have about 130,000 people go through here in 6 weeks, and it's a fun place.
You said 100 and what?
130,000.
Wow.
That's a great number.
That's impressive.
Yes, very. It is. It's we're not a big Scream park or anything, but we're one of the largest agritourism places in the country. So it's fun.
That's pretty cool. And Leonard, you know, a lot of people know your story, but for those who don't, tell us a little bit about how long you've been working in this field and what you do.
I was afraid you were going to ask that.
Yeah, no, we got a few minutes. So, you know, I'm going to kick back here.
I built my first haunted house in 1976 in a college dormitory, studying to be an architect. It did so well and I had so much fun that I volunteered with the March of Dimes, which was the big show in Dallas after I graduated. I chaired their event for 4 years before doing my own haunt, and my first haunts were critically acclaimed, but financial failures because I didn't understand that haunted house is a business just like any other, and you have to actually advertise it to get people to come. No matter how cool it is, if nobody knows about your haunt, they're not coming. So I decided there were so many people coming to me wanting me to design haunted houses for them that I took my dad's advice and started Hauntrepreneurs, which is a design and consulting service for the haunted house industry, and I've been doing that ever since. I've designed probably over 250-300 haunted houses in my career, and I've niched myself these days into helping people get started. So anybody that's thinking about doing it, I try to talk them out of it first, and if they just insist, then I do everything I can to help them be successful. It's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
And I believe before we got started, you mentioned that you were indirectly had a hand in Greg Allen actually getting started in this business.
That's what he tells me. Tell your story, Greg.
Well, actually, I went to the city and got everything okay through them. Went to the fire marshal, and the fire marshal called Leonard Pickle because we opened up the haunted house in 2003, and that was right before the that big accident, the fire they had at the I believe White Snake or something like this, some concert.
Right, and Gray so, White in Rhode
yes,
Island.
Yes, that's it. And they did not want the haunted house to open, so they contacted Leonard Pickle because they looked to find someone that knew something about haunted houses. And Leonard said, "Oh yeah, I know Greg Allen. Yeah, he's a great guy." And they let me open up thanks to Leonard, even though Leonard didn't even know me. So that worked well.
The moral is, drop Leonard's name and your haunt will open.
Worked for me.
And works for me too, amazingly.
He's still waiting for the check.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that check.
Oh well.
The interest alone.
I'm going to throw out the first question. It's a rather esoteric one, and I'd love each of your opinions on this. What makes a good scene in a haunt? I know that's a rather vague question, but you know, there's got to be something.
One of the biggest mistakes that I see haunts all over the country making, and even the elite haunts are, you know, some of the that everyone would know the name of. You walk into a room, and it's gorgeous. It's got detailed layer after layer after layer of detail and really cool props, and there's a costume character with an incredible costume and this incredible makeup standing in the middle of the room, and he doesn't really know what to do. If you're going to design a set, the very first, I mean, in architecture, they say form ever follows function. Well, what's the function of a haunted house? That's to scare the crap out of people. So the very first thing you need to think about when you're thinking about a room design is, what is the scare? What's going to happen? What is that character going to do to startle the people that are walking through? You can't just stick him in the room and say, okay, when people come in, scare them. A great actor can do that, but the average person can't. You've got to give them something to hide behind, something to pop out of, something to make the scene effective. Otherwise, you're really doomed to having a haunt that's just not, that doesn't have the scare factor that it needs. And I see that in haunts, you know, in first-time haunts. I see it in haunts that have been around forever. You know, gorgeous sets, but it's not just about the look. It's about the function.
What about you, Keith? You work for a theme park that has lots and lots of money to create some of these most gorgeous sets.
Yeah, I wish that was true.
just no, to let you know. Just to let you know.
Yeah, they want to.
Jim and I have both cut our teeth in theme parks.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I've done a lot outside of theme parks as well, with virtually no budget at all, and to make something look real and authentic, I think, is really important. If you're trying to recreate a laboratory, you need to fill it. We call it GAC, which means just lots of props and things that just fill the space and make it look lived in and real. It has a lot of, like you said, a lot of depth of layers of things that, and obviously hiding places are the, and I always try to get clever with the hiding. You know, people know that somebody's going to come. Like, we'll do a a decoy scare. Like there's a place you know somebody's going to be popping out over there because it's really obvious that there's a big prop or something like that. And then we'll hide the scare on the other side of the room in a sliding panel or something that you didn't expect at all.
Did you call that a geekaway room, a geekaway scare?
I've never called it that. A decoy.
Decoy scare, okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out how what geekaway meant, so I was just...
I'm sorry.
Decoy makes sense. I got you. I'm following now. Sorry.
I call it false scares or stuff like that. You could put a pair of shoes like underneath a partition wall that looks like somebody's standing back there. People see the shoes and they're like, "Oh, look, there's somebody over there," and then you get them from the other side.
I love to do that under a curtain. Anytime there's a curtain in a haunt, I'll put a pair of shoes sticking up underneath the curtain to make people think there's somebody behind it.
Uh huh.
Even if it's just a wall.
That's cool.
Yeah, I like to get clever. I like to do fake mirror scares. I've been working those into British Gardens the last couple of years where rarely do I have enough real estate to do it because you need to build two identical rooms. The scare itself is a hole wall that looks like you're looking into a reflection, but it's really a duplicate room on the other side built in mirror, like it backwards from the room you're in. And then a character can come right through the mirror. They can either jump through it or they can just come up from behind it. Works pretty good.
Well, I've seen that. How about you, Greg?
They both hit the nail on the head, actually. Leonard's talking about where the actor needs to be. It's just like when you build your haunted house, location is the number one thing. Well, location, location, location is the number one thing in a room, too. You've got to build your rooms around where these actors are going to be. You don't want them to get hit. You don't want them to get hurt. You want them to be effective, and you don't want them to be seen. And then, like Keith said, the misleading areas, you know, your decoys, that's very important, too. So they've both done a very good job explaining exactly what I would be looking for when I'm building something.
And then the other thing is the actors. I mean, quality actors can make a pretty crappy haunted house really effective. The other's not true. If you can have a really cool haunted house, and if your actors are crap, then it's not going to be effective.
I agree with you 100%. That's why we brought Michael Edwards here to do our actor training and all that stuff. So we're rolling right down the right direction on every single aspect of what it's going to take to make this place number one.
I'm going to withhold comment on that.
Well, I was going to say that Michael was a hack, but all time in chief, Michael.
We love him to death, and we've worked together, and he's fun, and he will make your actors something. So we'll go with that. Do you think the same design rules or tactics that you use for indoor haunts also work for outdoor? A lot of trails out there are designed or not designed. You know, it looks like sometimes somebody just cuts down a bunch of trees and they've got a trail through the woods or what?
Yeah, I think the same. I mean, what we're talking about is good scares, you know, realistic and great actors. So what's nice about a trail is that a lot of your scenic is already done. I mean, there's trees everywhere. So, and you know, the average city person doesn't get out into the woods very often. So it's already creepy. It's already scary. It's, you know, there's stuff, the trees are moving because the wind's blowing through them. But yeah, I mean, so it's already kind of realistic if you're using building some kind of a shack or building, you know, using the limbs and stuff that have fallen off the trees to create some kind of a jungle gym that they have to kind of walk through. That creates you know, some realistic stuff. It's always fun to do the little figures out of the little stick figures that are from Blair Witch. You know, hanging around is always kind of creeps people out. So it's, you know, it's the same thing. It's a great actor. It's a place for him to scare, to pop out of, you know, design the scares into the set. And the problem with that, with the trail, is that that's the hard part, is creating blinds for the actor to hide behind. And then the other problem is sight line. I've kind of boiled haunted house design down into two things. How do I shorten my sight line, and where do you hide the monsters? You know, the shorter the sight line, the closer the groups can be to each other without seeing what's happening to the one in front of them. That's easier in a haunted house than it is outside, because you're going to have longer straight pathways in a trail. And then where do you hide the monsters? You know, what kind of a, you got to design something for them to pop out of, swing down out of, something so that you can, so that people aren't expecting or don't see what's coming and don't see the group ahead of them, what happens to them ahead of them.
Storm, you had years of work on trails. Did you have work in designing them?
Oh, absolutely. No, I did a couple of scenes I designed myself. One I called the Mangler. We had, you know, out in the middle of the woods, so we used a lot of pallets to make a tunnel for this scene and did the lighting outside in. We found, you know, sometimes we'd overly dungeon dress. You know, sometimes you get off on a tangent and you think, oh, I got to have everything in the dungeon, chains and stuff. And, you know, we're out in the woods. It has that eerie feel to it as you're there. And, you know, you'd talk to some of the people going through the first weekend and things were a little too bright. And by end of the season, you know, it's a lot of stuff to put away in November in New England. So you start taking down some stuff, you know, a weekend early, and a lot of people don't even notice. It looks just as good. So sometimes you can overthink it and put the resources in the wrong place. But we do a lot with the sight lines. One of the neat things we start doing at the end to hide our actors is put them in plain sight. We start using scrims. You know, have the light behind them. We had one scene where we did like these dancing shadows, and you thought that the actor was behind the screen and dancing, but what we really did is light up the screen behind them, and they're in a blackout suit dancing in front of it. So as you're walking up to the screen, suddenly these black figures run right at you. Nice. So we do tricks like that often.
Leonard, you were telling me today about something you were doing regarding light and things like that, revolving a refrigerator.
Yeah, that's the pizza story. That's long. You sure you want to go into that?
And we can go with it after the break here, because it is time we take a quick break to play this very important message. You are listening to the Roundtable of Terror here on the Big Scary Show with our very special guest stars, Greg Allen from Terror in the Corn, Keith Kaminsky of Hollow Scream, Leonard Pickle, entrepreneur extraordinaire, the normal Goka host except for Jerry. We're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back.
In 1897, Dr. Alexander Hammond arrived at an institution for the criminally insane, only to discover the unsolved murders of several guards.
Drivers, where are we?
Jerry Vane takes you into Black Moon Asylum, a twisted abyss of torment, madness, and the horrifying mystery of Patient 292.
Time for your medication.
Black Moon Asylum, a symphonic journey into darkness from instrumentalist Jerry Vane. Download Black Moon Asylum at jerryvane.com, iTunes, cdbaby.com, Amazon MP3, and your favorite download site.
And we're back to the Roundtable of Terror, talking set and scenic design with Keith Kaminsky, Leonard Pickle, and Greg Allen. And before the break, we were talking to Leonard, and Leonard was referring to a great story, or I had referred to a story that Leonard had talked to us about involving a refrigerator and lighting. Leonard, why don't you throw that one out there?
As early in my career, it was one of the first or second year I did a haunted house, and we were building the haunt, and all the rooms were coming along really well, but we had this one room that we had a great concept for, but we weren't really, it just wasn't happening. We really hadn't even started working on it. And I was getting concerned about having anything in there at all. We were getting ready to open, and I was watching TV, just trying to wind down after working all day at the haunt. And there was a commercial of a guy walking into a pitch-black kitchen, opening the refrigerator and reaching in to grab something. And I thought, you know, it'd be scary as hell as when he opened up the refrigerator, he's blinded by the light from inside. And if an actor came over the top of the door right there, it'd scare the crap out of him. So next day I went running back to the haunt. I stole the refrigerator out of the actor break room and put it in the room. Put one light bulb, dim light bulb in the refrigerator. I also had an old oscillating searchlight kind of automatic thing that was about to fall apart, and we put that in there. I put a pizza in it. We had found when we started working on the building, we'd found an old rat corpse that had died and shriveled up into a mummy. And so I put him on a pizza and shellacked him on there so he wouldn't walk away, and put that in the pizza. Blocked the door open a little bit so when they walked into this room, the refrigerator was open. I built a box. It didn't have any detail. I painted doors on it, I think. Set that beside the refrigerator, and I put a slit in the wall beside the refrigerator to a backstage area so the actor could kind of slip out, wait for people to open the refrigerator and look in at the pizza and say, "Oh wow, look at that!" And then the guy would scare the crap out of him over the door. And so I said, "That's good enough," and finished up everything else we were doing. Opened up the haunted house, and it wasn't 10 or 15 minutes into the show, and I'm getting this call. So we got a wall down. I'm running into the room with, screw gun, and it's probably hammer and nails at that point. It's so long ago, but and this wall is blown out across from the refrigerator. So I put it back in place, and I put a little, a little brace on it to try to help hold it in place. And I'm not even out of the haunt again. For that wall's blown out again. That wall's blown out again. I said, "Crap!" And what happened is people were looking in that refrigerator, and when he came over the wall, they were just or over the door, they were backing up so hard they were blowing the wall out that was opposite the refrigerator. So I finally went in there, put a door frame in it to support that that wall. But it was the most effective room. Total accident, total mistake, last minute thing. And it was the scariest room in the haunt that year. So I said, "This is great. I'm gonna spotlight this thing next year. We're going to put it right at the beginning. I always put my best scare first and my next to best scare last. Hopefully the first scare sets everybody up for the haunt, and then the last scare makes them, run out the door screaming, and so they remember." And so I said, "I'm going to move this to the very first room in the show." And I did that, and it was the same refrigerator. It was the same box. But no one, when we opened up and people started going through, nobody would open the door. They'd stay way away from the door, and they would walk by, and no one would open the door. Well, now it's the worst room in the house because no one is opening the refrigerator door. There's no scare at all. So the next year I flipped it over and made them go the opposite direction. That didn't do anything. So for years I kept trying to figure out how to make people open the refrigerator. And I finally given up on the scare, and I just put shutters over the cabinet so that when people walk by, we put a light in the room. Now, people would bust out through the cabinet and scare people, with some crash doors on the shutters over the cabinet. And I eventually gotten away from even having the crack beside the refrigerator. But I kept trying to figure out why nobody was opening the refrigerator door or how to make them open the refrigerator door. And finally, we were in Salem, Massachusetts with the haunt, and right before the people went into the kitchen, there was a crack that you could whisper stuff to people, a little broken plaster sliding that I'd made so you could see where the people were going into the room. And I started whispering pizza, pizza to them. And you'd say pizza, pizza, and they'd scream because they thought they were in the hallway by themselves, and they'd say, "Did he say pizza, pizza?" "Yeah, I think so." And then when they walked into the refrigerator, they had to open... or they walked into the kitchen, they had to open the refrigerator door. They just couldn't not do it. But by this time, I'd done away with the whole scare, so it didn't even work. But just as a lark, I started whispering that through the cracks of people. The actors picked it up, and so there was a lot of pizza pizza going on that year. And that just happened to be the year that Tony Timpone, who was working for Fangoria magazine at the time, came through the haunt. And the review that he gave us was, "I don't know what's wrong with those people. They just kept whispering pizza, pizza at me when I was walking through the hallway. Stupidest thing I'd ever seen." So I got a really bad review, but it was there for a reason. But of course, all the pickle haters out there were just slamming me for the review. So I've been known as the pizza, pizza guy for a while.
Norm, I know you had a question while we were going on during the break.
Yeah, and took me a second to find my mute button. Going from Leonard's story there, when you've designed a haunt, have you had this idea in mind and what you expected, and then during the season find out that the customers are reacting to it or following your scene completely different than what you intended, and
what you had planned. Keith, do you want to start on that one first?
I never get to see the finished ones at Busch Gardens, unfortunately, because they send me home before they open. But when I've done my own haunts around town and stuff here locally, I can't think of a specific example of that happening, but I did want to share. We wanted to do an elevator, and I've used this technique many times. I think somebody's building an elevator right now. Building a haunt over there, are you? So I wanted the floor to move like an elevator would feel, you know, shaky, whatever. So I took what are you building?
Somebody's building something.
Or somebody's walking around.
Hear that, or we're possessed and have footsteps on the round table floor. All right, let's do a mic mute and check if all our guests can.
This is Leonard.
I'm fine.
Oh, it stopped. Okay, so what I figured out to do is I laid a piece of plastic lattice, you know, the stuff you buy for your patio or whatever, Home Depot, and in each one of the little squares, I put a golf ball. And then on top of that, I laid a piece of plywood, and then I made a frame around it so it would limit the movement to only maybe an inch in all directions. And then we built our elevator on top of that. And then when the guests went in there, we had the elevator go crazy or whatever, and an actor would stand behind it and shake it. And it was like the cheapest way to get a hydraulic feel. You know, nowadays we probably have to buy real equipment, but it worked for us back then. It's fun.
That's pretty awesome with the golf balls. Greg, what about you? Anything that you've had your customers react differently to than your expectations?
Well, as a matter of fact, the first year Transworld was in St. Louis, we opened up Fear Fest for the Columbia Haunt Tour. And all of our actors, we let their family go in the night before as kind of a test. And the last room in the haunted house was a big failure. And I had 24 hours to switch that thing over to make it a big success before all the haunted house owners in the country came over. So, it's quite... quite the oh crap, what do we do now? And but it we tore it all out, put it all back in, and the room worked very well. But yeah, at first we were like, okay, what do we do now? Because it was just a big downer. But it worked in the long run, and everybody seemed to like it at Transworld. So,
awesome. And Leonard, what about you? Another quick example of something just being very different than what you expected the guests to experience?
One day I was designing the haunts. I was done designing one of the haunts one year, and my parents were in town. And what I've been doing, and I used to even sell booklets that there were cut sheets for different kind of room designs. So I had this stack of papers that I was thinking about putting it on in the haunt that year. And one of them was this hallway with arches down the hallway and this giant rat the size of a small Volkswagen, you know, sticking his head through one of the archways like it was a mouse hole. And I decided it was too much trouble, too much expense. We couldn't afford it this year, so I kind of set it off to the side. And one morning I woke up and came into the kitchen, and there was this really, really cute little gray rat made out of fur, and had a black nose and little ears and little eyes on it. It had newspaper stuffed in it, and Mom was cooking breakfast, and I said, "What, Mom? What is this?" "Oh, it's the rat for your giant rat room. I made it for you." It's a little smaller than what I was anticipating. And oh no, this will be great. And it's like, so you're not going to use it? So I went into the garage and stuck some chicken wire in it and a turn of the nose because I knew it was going to get the crap kicked out of it. And I basically made it into a skateboard with a handle on it so that some actor could push it through a hole. And I cut a little hole in the wall about the size of a doghouse hole and threw an actor in a backstage corridor. And I said, when you see feet walk by here, stick the rat out. And I had to keep going back in there to mess with it because the people kept ripping and breaking the handle off of the thing. And I went back in there. So every time I went back in there, the handle had been broken off. So I was actually doing it pretty often, and you were, people were freaking out. People were jumping over the hole before they even saw anything came out of it. And when it came out, they were totally freaking out. And a couple of nights later, I hear this blood-curdling scream from the inside of the haunted house, and I said, "Oh my God, we've killed somebody!" And I go running into the haunt to see what's going on, and I turn the corner into that hallway. The handle had broken off of this mouse head again, and there was like a 90-pound girl that had a hold of the 2x4 that was on the back, with her arm stuck all the way out the hole with the redhead, and there was some other 16-year-old girl in the corner in a fetal position screaming her brains out because this rat was trying to chase her down, was trying to attack her in the corner. It's like, oh my God. So I even recreated and gave the rat his own room. It wasn't just an afterthought in a hallway after that. I gave him his own room for many years, and of course we upgraded the quality of the prop, but it was a great scare for a long time.
That's fantastic. Leonard and Keith, to a lesser extent, I guess, if somebody hires you and says, "I want you to help me design a haunt," how do you go about the process of that? Is that, do you use, CAD, AutoCAD, or?
So this is Keith. And when I design a haunt for Busch Gardens, they typically start with a venue flow, which is a written document that describes each room, what you're going to see in there, how many actors are in there, the intent of that room, and how it goes with the story. And then I will take a plan view. I'll draw a plan view based on their square footage, which is typically about 4,000 square feet. And we put about 13 rooms usually in one haunt. And I'll do a plan that shows the guest flow and where everything is laid out. We have to have lots of room for backstage access for actors, also for technicians, audio equipment, lighting equipment, dressing rooms sometimes where they actually change their costumes and get made up is part of the haunt as well, or part of the space. Then from there, I'll draw a point of view sketch, which is a POV of each room. And once that's approved, then I will do a set of elevations for each room showing color, props, and then I'll do reference pages for each room that show my intent for, wallpaper, looks of wallpaper, looks of artwork, props, all that kind of stuff. So that's the typical way that I do it.
Are you hampered by what Busch Gardens tells you to do, or do they give you pretty much the freedom that you want?
They have a creative director that will write the story. And then they'll get it approved for their corporate people, whoever needs to salute. And then that comes to me. So from there, I can do whatever I want, which is great. And I typically have new ideas that I run by them. And they're like, "Oh, yeah, that's great. Great way to amp that scene up," or whatever. So I get a lot of freedom that way.
Very nice. Leonard, how about you?
It's similar. To me, a haunted house is a movie that you walk from scene to scene, so I kind of start off with a storyline, similar to what Kevin was saying, and then that kind of gives me, once your storyline is set, that gives you, the time period that you're in, it tells you what kind of evil lurks inside this structure and what kind of minions it's created. And, then I have a set of, my favorite room designs, my favorite scares, and then I try to retheme those or change them around to fit the concept. It tells you what kind of building, your storyline tells you what kind of building you're in, so it tells you what the rooms would be, and then you have to put those in logical order. You don't want somebody going from a closet into a bathroom into a garage, so you want to put those in some kind of an order that makes sense. Design the room around the scare again. You figure out what the scare is. You figure out what the best pathway past the scare is. Do you want the guy looking right at the scare? Do you want him going past it on his left, on his right? Is it around the corner? And then I rearrange the furniture in the room, the gack and different set pieces that are in the room to force the patron past the scare in the direction they're in the way that's going to give them the best scare. And then you draw the walls around the room to create the walls or to create the space itself, and then those become little pieces that are then, you know, puzzle pieces that are rearranged and fit into the best pathway that has the maximum walkway length is usually my goal is to do. I do, you know, 5, 6, maybe even 10 different options on sketch paper as to what the best flow is. Always looking for the best order of rooms and then in the maximum walkway distance, because that's going to maximize the length of the attraction. And then after I've got a sketch, I'll put it into AutoCAD. Typically I don't do, most of my clients don't need anything in 3D. When we go 3D, we'll do a SketchUp model, but, typically everything is done from two dimensional drawings and how to build each one of the pieces. And then, sometimes I'll do elevations depending upon if it's a prop or something, we'll need elevations of it, but I don't normally do wall elevations. We'll do a typical, lookbook that shows you what kind of scenic will go in each one of the rooms and what the walls should look like. And luckily I'm there on site for most of the installation. And like, I guess Kevin, you're on site as well through the installation, just not the operations.
Yes. I'm there for 2 months during the install.
Nice. So yeah. And then, you know, just making sure that the gags work, making sure the special effects work, making sure that the help train the actors a little bit and then you're off and running.
Yeah, I should probably mention how important lighting is as well. You know, we work under just regular work lights the entire 2 months, you know, building and setting up and painting and propping all these things. Then the lighting people come in and they have their own designer and they put their lights. You know, I walk them through the plan and tell them, you know, what's going to happen here and there, and this should be dark, this should be light, but the creative director that's no longer at Busch Gardens, I swear to God, he had the eyes of a cat, because we'd walk in for our first lighting walkthrough, and I wouldn't even think the lights were on. It's like, I can't see anything. And then when they pump it full of fog, it gets even worse. So that's something to think about when you're designing. It's like, don't waste your time on stuff that's going to be just disappearing into the dark.
Darkness is definitely your friend.
Yes, it is, unless you're a scenic designer that wants everything to show. I do.
which should be fired as soon as he's done the haunted house, because you can't afford to do scenic on everything.
Right.
But yeah, you light what you want people to see. And my favorite way to light stuff is with practicals. I really don't spend a lot of money on theatrical, even LED lighting. LED lighting is nice because it's small and you can hide it. The majority of the stuff I light with white light, you know, maybe an off-white or a cool light or a warm light, but warm white. But I like to use practicals. You know, nowadays with LED, it used to be tough to do when everything was incandescent, because if it got bumped into it, the light would go out. But with LEDs, you can light stuff that even is going to get, like a chandelier or something that's swinging in the room could be an LED light, and it won't burn out. So. But a lot of people will do a lot of scenic work in work lights and paint the walls really cool color or whatever, and then you put a green light or something on it, and you can't even tell what color it was.
Yeah, you can't light blood. Bloody rooms, you can't light with blue or green, because it just looks like black. Blood turns black.
And you have to be careful with making them too dark, too. I mean, a lot of people will base their walls out with black. The first thing they'll do when they're building their wall panels is paint them black. In my opinion, white is the new black. When I base my haunted houses out these days, I paint the walls white, and then I distress them down as dark as I want them to be. It's much easier to do that than it is to start with a black wall and bring it up to where you can see it. And
yeah.
You know, I'll go through a haunted house it's got this really cool living room scene, and there's a fireplace on the wall, and there's pictures hanging on the wall, and there's all this set stuff in the room. And the walls are black. And in a haunted house, anything that's black disappears. You can paint a floor, paint a hallway gray, and paint a black blob in the middle of the hallway, and people will jump over it because they think it's a hole. Anything that's black in a haunted house goes away. And it's so easy to just take a dirty paint water and put a roller in it and do a quick wash on a black wall to give it some texture and make it even appear. Otherwise, it just disappears in the low light levels.
Greg, when how much freedom are you given
for the sets and everything. Do you change your themes out every year, or how much of your themes do you change at your haunt?
Well, we can't really change the theme because we're a ghost town, but we do change a whole lot of it. Right now, we're probably going to be changing up probably 50% of it this year, the way it's looking. One thing we have, the disadvantage we have over these guys is ours is all outdoors. So depending on what the moon is doing that night, if it's cloudy, if it's a full moon, if it's a new moon, you never know. So our lighting changes with the days. So that gives us, it's a lot more challenging. It's hard to put things out there that you don't want to get destroyed by the sunlight. Latex props, things like that really take a beating here in the Colorado sun. And so we have to be very cautious of how we build things because it has to hold up to snowstorms. It has to hold up to hailstorms. It has to hold up to 110 degree sunshine. I mean, there's so many oddball things we have to deal with here. We use a lot of LED lighting. We do have a corn maze. We've got so many variables here. We have a cemetery that they first go into, and then they get on a, it's an enclosed wagon that looks like a giant hearse, and we haul them out and drop them off in the cornfield in front of a building that we built out there. And a lot of people won't even get off the wagon. They're like, no, I'm not going in there. And so after that, then you've got the corn maze. And once you get through the corn maze, then you go through the haunted house. It takes right about 40 minutes to get through everything out here. And it is challenging because it's all outside. But we've made it work. As far as freedom, my first year here, what happened was I was running a haunted house in Missouri, and the gentleman that was running this one passed away on the operating table suddenly. And wow. So I had, I also was the designer and the builder of the paintball trailers when that craze was going on, which it still is, but not near as much as it was. And I sold the Andersons a set of those trailers. And so when I sent my condolences, I said, if there's anything I can do, just let me know. Next thing I know, they're saying, well, you can come here and run our haunted house. And I'm like, oh, okay. So what we did was we let our kids run our haunted house in Columbia, Missouri, because it was doing fine. We came out here. I fell in love with the place, and the rest of it's history. I sold everything and came out here. The first year, he was a little nervous. I was like, okay, just give me a weekend. Let me do this. If it works, great. If it doesn't, we'll do it your way. And Jim, the owner, he's like, okay, that's all right. And I've never let him down yet on something that I felt strongly about. So as far as freedom, I have 100% freedom to do whatever I want. No complaints at all. And as far as the financial side of it, we run it by him. I don't get shot down very often. If I want something, he understands that there's a reason for it, and he usually says okay. So I couldn't ask for a better place to work and a better place to build, actually.
Very nice. Storm, I think you had a question, did you not?
Yeah, when you're planning, and just, you know, from my experience too, so I want to get some of the thoughts from you guys. When you're planning and building your scenes, what are you more worried about? The destruction by the customers or the destruction by the actors? Leonard, why don't you take that one first?
I was just shouting, actors.
Yeah, you know, one of the March Dimes songs we put in this, it was an old bank building, you know, and I knew it was all sheetrock. So I put plywood all over everything. We put panels up on, you know, we wanted to change the look anyway, and we couldn't paint it. So we put plywood panels up everywhere, trying to protect the sheetrock from the actor, from the patrons going through. And then we went in to take all the walls down. And as I was taking the panels down, the walls behind the panels, the sheetrock walls behind the panels, were destroyed. They were in tatters, and come to find out, the actors were behind the walls, beating on the walls as the patrons were going through. and they wrecked the place. You know, it was like I should have been putting the panels on the actor backstage side and not worried about the patrons going through. They're too afraid to do anything, but the actors are standing back there for, you know, long lengths of time. They're bored, start peeling at a little hole, and pretty soon it's a 8x8 opening in a wall.
Ooh,
so yeah, I'd say actors. They're both tough on the show, but at least the patrons going through aren't like unscrewing light bulbs, because it'll be scarier if this room is pitch black.
Keith, what about you?
Oh yes, I definitely agree. Actors are the worst. We've had 55-gallon drums turned into like a post.
Oh my god.
I mean, just beating them with... We shouldn't give them stuff like pipes and stuff, but they find them or they bring them home. I don't know what they do. We'll put diamond plate places where we see that there's damage and the actor's hitting that area. We'll put a big sheet of diamond plate over it and try to paint it so it matches the wall behind it so it goes away, but literally just beat the crap out of everything. So actors is my vote.
And Greg, what about you? You bring this to a consensus?
Oh, I agree. Actors. Considering that we are a ghost town, we don't have steel all over the place. We have wooden walls that look like old ghost town buildings. And you find some people that somehow mysteriously wind up with a piece of chain. They can destroy your beautiful set in one night. You go through the next day and you're like, what the hell happened in here? And so you just... We had one wall, and a guy had a plastic 55-gallon barrel that he was chucking down the hallway behind the people, and now there's holes in this wall that we had just built this year. And I'm just like, how are you destroying this stuff with a plastic 55-gallon drum? So I was like, and what are you doing throwing it down the hallway behind our customers? So, yeah, that's the actors here are my biggest nightmare.
Well, yeah. at least a good thing. You can counter it with a good director and a couple of little tricks with the actors too. I've had 1 year we had one actor and he was just tearing up the place, just finding sticks in the woods and beating the living snot out of our scenes. My general manager was flipping out. So you know, I stopped these guys like within the first 10 minutes of one of the things. I saw that they're hitting everything again. I go, guys, you're much better actors than this. You know, these people are coming to see you, not just a loud noise and a stick. You know, find some other way. Be creepy. Do this. Do that. And by end of the night, I come back through, and one of the actors, real young kid, he's so excited. He goes, Storm, I did it. It worked. I found this plastic sandwich bag, and I just walk up behind him and flip the sandwich bag in my hand. And they got more scared than when I was hitting things. I'm like, okay, yep. Good.
Yeah, I forbid hand props in my shows, unless there's a really, really, really good, you know, storyline reason for somebody to have a hand prop. I forbid them, because they're going to either hit themselves, hit a patron, or hit the wall with that thing, and none of those are a good option.
Yeah, we would, but you know, that's one of the things with a farm. You get that spookiness out there, but they find stuff, or they'll bring stuff from home. I had one with a machete. I'm like, what the hell are you doing with that? That's a real machete. No. Bad actor.
At Busch Gardens, they sell plastic yards of beer that everybody's walking around with, and they, because they put a lid on them, they let them take them through the mazes, and those typically turn into weapons that, and we have actors that just get beaten to shit with these plastic beer things. I mean, some do it on purpose. Some just do it out of sheer reaction. You know, they just stick it out like that and whack somebody in the mouth with it. So I'm not saying actor or guests are don't destroy stuff. They do their fair share. But
yes, they do.
I will admit that. Several years ago when I was working at the theme park that I used to work at in the Alcatraz outdoor area, I was lucky or unlucky enough to find a couple of maybe 18-inch strands of chain that I attached to my wrist that, you know, I'd walk around like I had broken my chains. But boy, howdy, you slam that against a fence or one of the metal trash cans or anything like that, and the maintenance people had to repaint a couple of the trash cans out there during the 4 weeks we were running. There were probably lots of little pits and dents in several of the walls and several of the things, because you could just, you know, swing them and bang and all that stuff. And they never told me not to use the chains that I found.
So, they just gave you dirty looks.
It was too dark. I couldn't tell if they were dirty looks or not, but, you know.
And it's one thing.
I was not in the signature character. So
the signature character has hand props. That makes sense. But inside the haunt, it's just, I just don't see any need for it. You know, unless it's a Freddy and he's got to have a Freddy glove or something, it just doesn't make sense.
It usually ends up being one of those things that's too much. You know, save it for the queue lines.
Right.
They work out well. To our Koga hosts, do you guys have any final questions?
No, it's been really informative. All of our guests have really given a lot of insight. I think the listeners are really going to appreciate this, Rot.
Cool. I just got one more quick one. Badger talking about, you know, back in the days as a young, fresh actor and not having the experience and doing things like with the chains and stuff that we wouldn't do now. Gentlemen, with your years of experience, is there one quick thing you would give as advice based on your experience? And we'll probably go with Greg first on that one.
Oh, let's see here. I would say the best thing is just make it flow right. Make it to where you don't have anything where an actor is going to stop people. You've got to do flow. Flow is very important at our haunted house. We love to get the scares, but we've got to get those people through too. So design your sets, design your scenes, design everything to where it's not going to be a bottleneck. And if there is a way, if there's a bottleneck there and you know that you're going to have a bottleneck, have a backup plan to go around that bottleneck. Like if you're going to have something where people are going to be crawling and you're going to have 3,000 to 4,000 people that night, you know, sooner or later that's going to get blocked up. So you need a hallway to go around it or something like that, just to make up backup plans for everything. Just throughput is very important. And that's just make it as realistic as possible and throughput everything. Just, it's all there.
Awesome. Great advice. Keith, what about you? A quick word of advice from your years of experience.
I was going to say the same thing as Greg. We have to have bypasses for several areas, like when we have a rotating tunnel or something like that that people have to walk through. Certain people just will not go through, and you can't physically push them through, and you can't make them go, but we'll have a bypass door, a hallway or whatever that takes them around it.
Awesome. Chicken runs are always fun.
Yeah.
Leonard, what about you? You probably are one of the premier experienced people in the industry right now. What's a word of advice you would give?
A haunted house is a business, just like any other business. And 60% of all businesses, startup businesses, fail. And it's probably higher than that for a haunted house. I mean, you have to treat it like a business. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, you can get people to act for free. Yeah, you can do it on a shoestring, but really, should you? I mean, so many, what people don't understand about business, and I didn't, when I did my first haunt, it was, you know, I was an architectural graduate. I had no idea of business. I wish I had taken business in college. It would have saved me a huge amount of money, a huge number of learning curve. But, you know, I built my first haunted house on credit cards and pocket change. And when all was said and done, I was $20,000 in debt. I thought that was a huge failure, not realizing that a haunted house is a business. And a business takes 3 to 5 years to become profitable in most cases. So I've had so many people that I've talked to that started a haunted house and failed because, yeah, they made enough money to get open. They made enough money to operate. They made enough money to even make it through the first year. But they didn't have enough money to make it to even start up in year two. Because when you first start a business, you're paying for walls, you're paying for props. You've got a huge investment in this thing. And you can't get all that money back in 1 year unless you're really lucky or you got a really good marketing plan. And, you know, marketing is the last thing that you pay for. And if you go over budget on your build, you go over budget on your scenic, you go over budget on your costumes or props, that's going to eat into that marketing budget. And that's the worst thing you can do, because that's what that drives people to the door. If you don't spend the money in marketing, you're not going to make it. And you have to treat it like a business. So many people call me up and say, well, we don't have to make money because we're a nonprofit. Well, what's the point? You know, most of the nonprofit haunts in the country, if they would throw the concept of nonprofit away and say, no, we want to run this thing like it was a for-profit haunt, what would a for-profit haunt do? They would make way more money than they do now, and even if they gave all that to charity, that's great. But if you approach it as a business and not like a hobby, then you're going to be much better off.
Absolutely fantastic advice. And yeah, the nonprofit thing gets me too. I'm like, what are you doing it for? And what don't you want to be the most help to whatever organization you plan to help with your nonprofit status? I mean, you know, get in there.
It's fun. I mean, haunted scare people is fun. Build, you know, doing a haunted house is fun. You know, but if you don't make any money, you don't get to play anymore.
No, and that's why I'd always tell my actors, too. Hey, we're paying you for the 3% of a-holes that you have to deal with a night. You know, everybody else who you enjoy scaring, you're doing that for free. We're paying you for the other guys.
Very true. That's actually a brilliant way of thinking about it. But looking at the clock on the wall, it does look like we have to start winding down here. So this is the part of the roundtable we like to affectionately call the plugs. So, Keith, let's start with you. For people wanting more information about what you do or Hollow Scream or your company, what websites or social media can people get more information?
They can go to keith-kaminsky.com. You want me to spell it?
Yes.
There's several different ways you can spell Kaminsky. So.
Yeah. It's KEITH-KAMINSKI.com. And I have to tell you, I haven't put anything new on that website for about 8 years, but you can see some of the Busch Gardens work I've done there. I've also worked for Universal Studios in Florida and in Hollywood. I do a lot of props and scenic for TV and film. And I didn't mention earlier that one of the greatest gigs I did with Halloween is I was contacted by a producer in 2010 who had me come and decorate the White House for Halloween.
Oh, fun.
It was really great. It was the Obamas at the time, and I had a blast.
Nice. Will you be at Midsummer Scream in a couple of weeks?
I don't think I'm going to be able to make it, no.
Ah, because we're going to have a booth there. If you do get a chance to make it by, come by and say hi.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Excellent. Leonard, let's hear from you. For people wanting maybe to get more information from you, your websites, all the social medias and things, how people can get in touch with you.
Most of my social media is under Leonard Pickle. You know, Pickle is spelled P-I-C-K-E-L instead of L-E, so it's not like a real pickle. But hauntrepreneurs.com, a lot of articles there for people that are interested in getting started or trying to figure out how to increase their capacity or do what they do better. And we'll be speaking at HauntCon in January, which will be in New Orleans. So we invite everybody out to come to see that show and to hang out in New Orleans and see some haunts and hang out on Bourbon Street, have a good time. And, just give me a call if you have any questions. And I love talking haunt with people, and it's always a good time.
Excellent. And Greg, how about yourself? How can people get more information about Terror in the Corn and all the websites and social media?
Okay, to get a hold of me, just go to scarygreg@andersonfarms.com. For information about the farm, it's andersonfarms.com. And terrorinthecorn.com, zombiepaintball.com. We have so many different things out here for so many different people. It's an amazing event, one of the largest agritainment companies in the country. And our pumpkins alone, we have over 350,000 of them sitting out here just waiting to be picked. So it's just it's a 30-acre corn maze. It's an amazing place, and it's wonderful. And Disney says they're the greatest place on earth, but they've never seen this place. So that's the way I look at it.
So many pumpkins.
We have over 75 different varieties. So if you want a orange pumpkin, red pumpkin, blue pumpkin, pink pumpkin, green pumpkins, we have them. White pumpkins, any sizes, colors, it's amazing what we have out here. And then with the 75 different varieties, they're all cross-pollinating, so you get some real weird stuff coming out of there, too. So it's really neat.
Oh, damn. Now I got to change all my wedding plans. Now I know where I got to have my wedding.
Actually, we do offer those, too. We have a wedding park here. Google comes and they do their corporate event, their corporate picnic. And this year we've got Google, MTech, and Frontier Airlines is doing theirs here this year also. And those are the three that I'm aware of right off the bat. But yeah, we do weddings and all kinds of fun stuff here.
Well, guys, I want to thank you all for taking the time to come on the Big Scary Show to talk about scenic design. I know for a couple of you it was kind of last minute, actually. I think with like Keith, it might have been the last 24 hours or so. Yes. But I do want to thank our guest, Keith Kaminsky in Los Angeles, who's with Hollow Scream down in Tampa, Greg Allen in Erie, Colorado with Terror in the Corn, and of course the one, the only Leonard Pickle down in Orlando, Florida. And, of course, we couldn't do this without our fantastic hosts, including Storm.
If Leonard Pickle's shellacked rat pizza is not on your haunt menu this year, you have failed.
Nice.
Meat Hook Jim.
I'm going to steal a saying from Jerry. I got nothing.
And speaking of Jerry, we hope he's enjoying not being on the roundtable tonight. We know what he's doing, and I know he's having a fantastic time, so he'll be on the next one, we hope. My name is Drew Badger, wondering if there's any way we can get a plaid pumpkin, but we'll have to talk about that next time.
Ludicrous pumpkin.
We have a camouflage pumpkin that looks camouflaged.
You find them.
How do you see them? This is the Roundtable of Terror here on The Big Scary Show.
Looking for a comprehensive ticketing solution for your haunted attraction? HauntPay has the answer. We skip the features you don't need and focus on the ones you like, such as timed ticketing and repeat time slots, variable ticket types, bundle and combo tickets, social media discounts, and now featuring all-in-one options including managing your tickets online and at the door, as well as upselling and managing your merchandise and concessions, with a comprehensive report on everything at the end of the night. Head on over to HauntPay.com and get started in 60 seconds for free.
Verse 13, The Souls That Wander, on The Big Scary Show.
Hello, everyone. Drew Badger here at CHEC in Ocala, Florida. We're talking to all the cool kids, the vendors, some of the big, big, giant theme park folks, and some of the smaller haunts out here. Not necessarily small in size, but, you know, they're not the theme parks. And one of the ones I found out here that was really, really interesting was the Kirby Family Farms that owns a slew of haunted attractions all on the same site. And they also are a 501c3 and helps a lot of kids who are at risk or troubled or need a little help here and there. And I've got Daryl and Tim from Kirby Family Farms. How you guys doing?
Doing well.
Doing very good, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about what Kirby Family Farms does and why you're a 501c3 charity and how you help the community.
Well, our day job is we work with at-risk and special needs children. We're actually an educational facility. We have a museum on site. We have quite a big collection now. We have a full-size railroad on property. We have a big collection of some rare railroad pieces, including the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus train. We have some military locomotives and things, and we use the railroad's history and agriculture to introduce to the kids to not only educate them about those things, but kind of run it as a parallel to the tough things that they can encounter in life. And so we invite right now, last year we had over 3,000 children that came through our programs at no cost. Next year we're looking to invite over 10,000 children. And all of these programs and events for them are free. So the way we offset those costs is we open the farm to the public for special events. And our Lost Railroad Haunted event has quickly grown into one of our biggest fundraisers for the facility.
Now, you mentioned that it's more than one attraction. It's not just a Lost Railroad. There's other things that people can see while they're on site, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct. We have, of course, the Lost Railroad is our signature attraction, a scary train ride on a full-size 100-year-old, pulled by a 100-year-old locomotive, open-air coaches, so it's really nice. Uncomfortable, and we make sure of that.
And probably a little warm in October, even in Florida.
It depends, you know. The year before was quite warm, and then this last year we had the perfect temperature, so you never know, as Florida always is, you never know what you're going to get from hour to hour. But we have the Lost Railroad, and then if you make it through that, if you survive the Lost Railroad, we have the Forgotten Freak Show, a walkthrough indoors. Then we also have the Trailer Park of Terror, that is an actually hand-built old trailers, buses, motorhomes that you have to build up the courage to go in and out of and around all those things, and the residents of the trailer park aren't happy to have visitors. Then we have the Abandoned Clown Woods, which you can fill in the blanks for that without any things. And then our new ride is our 1962 Hollingsworth Dark Ride, that old sketchy carnival ride we all remember where you go through. And for me as a kid, I was always more scared about the condition of the ride and the guy putting me on it than the scares itself. So we've got some extra surprises inside our dark ride for you.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, and you were talking about the volunteers that you hire. You've got a really special kind of thing going on if you volunteer for the entire season.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to, for all of our volunteers that volunteer for each night that we're open, you will be put in a drawing to earn win an actual running hearse. Yeah, it's pretty cool. We got a whole fleet of them out there, and we're willing to give one away to one of our lucky actors who come out and help us out every night.
Do they have to be 16 in order to win this thing?
No, of course not. If they're younger than that, they can either give it to their mom, because you know their mom would like to carpool everybody to school
in
one of those.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Or they could either sell it if they wanted to, or if they don't want to take it and drive it because they just aren't into a hearse, they can trade it in for a $500 gift card.
Oh, very nice.
So that's pretty cool.
So how many people do you normally hire every year? I mean, you guys are growing every year with this, and it's expanding, and you've added a new ride this year. How many people do you have, volunteers and otherwise, and where are you pulling from?
We have, like this year, we'll be looking for at least 60 volunteers. We'll have, you know, that'll be our, between 50 and 60 will be a perfect presentation for us. So we'll be looking to bring in at least 60 volunteers.
Well, very nice. And the funds that you have that you raise with this, they all go towards helping the kids at risk and all that?
Yes, sir. They stay right within our organization. Besides the funds, you know, we're growing, we're buying props and things. Yeah. So besides the expenses of the actual event to put it on, all the proceeds will stay within Kirby Farm for its outreach programs.
Do any of the kids that you assist, do they come back and say, hey, I want to help work the farm or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, lots of times they come back out and help us out for more than just a Halloween event or, you know, all the other events. It's kind of a big gathering. They like to get around and hang out with Mr. Daryl and because, you know, Daryl Big Daddy, you know. We have a lot of fun, too, when the kids come out and they help set up the shows and stuff like that. I mean, not only are we teaching them responsibility and maybe how to use a screw gun or, you know, just, you know, different skill sets like that, but they have a lot of fun out there. And of course, you always get fed a good hot dog while you're out there, too. So, but, yeah, they do like to come back and help for other events, I think, to answer your question.
So it kind of comes full circle. You help some kids, and they come back and help you, and then in turn maybe they become a mentor or something, and they help the next generation.
Yes, and we'll even have children that are in our programs. If they've shown a level of improvement, you know, well, let me rephrase that. If they're coming from a troubled background and they've been in trouble with the law and things, we work a lot with kids that may have just freshly gotten out of juvie, you know, juveniles, detention centers. If they're showing enough improvement, we will place them amongst kids that may be out there volunteering for community hours for college, you know, applications and things. And we found, now I don't want to be a hypocrite, the number one reason we do this Lost Railroad is we got to pay for the place so we can do all these programs for free to thousands of kids every year. But we've also found, and especially with the Lost Railroad, because it's just so much fun, that these kids, you know, we kind of see a social loafing thing. You may have a kid that's had a rough background, found himself in trouble at a young age. We put him by a couple kids that it's almost like a mentorship begins right there. They start working together. So now you've got a kid that's going to, you know, striving to be valedictorian of their school alongside a kid who was in a detention center, you know, 6 months ago. And so we've seen that as an improvement as well. And then, of course, every haunt and within the haunt, we have adult leaders, you know, that also are there to watch them and guide them and things. So it's really become a great thing, not only for kids that come back and help us, but kids that are actually in our programs now. If they're of a certain age, they're allowed to participate.
So I assume, you know, it's not just a haunted attraction, but you do have other activities during the course of the year that the public is welcome to attend, and that also in turn supports the charity.
Yes, we have three big events that we do as fundraisers. Our biggest, by far, that really pays a large portion of our expenses is our Christmas train. We do a big Christmas train. That's really popular. And then we do our biggest single weekend event. Now, we do it two weekends a year because it's so popular, is a Wild West weekend. Over 200 volunteers come in for that event. And everything from train robberies to shootouts and gunfights and just all kinds of can-can shows and all kinds of fun. And then, of course, the one we're talking about today, the Lost Railroad, is really, and I mean, I hope my Christmas train folks don't hear this, but it's definitely my favorite. And not just because of the fun to see people, you know, we scare and then make, you know, and then they laugh at themselves. You know, our thing is we don't want them to go away, you know, tormented for life with something they experience. We're into gotchas and phobias. And I told the kids, if you talk Mr. Kirby into going scary, we're going to focus, our focus is going to be gotchas and phobias, but we're going to be the best at it. And we have really done a good job.
Excellent. And one thing that you mentioned, too, before we started was you've just started recently giving out scholarships.
Yes, yes. We our first scholarship, we have grown to a point where we can start giving scholarships. And our kids now, we've had enough kids come through where they're getting that graduation age and things. And neat little story about our first scholarship recipient. He's now a paramedic. He used it to go to paramedic school. And recently he was featured in a article in a nearby county where he's working. He was on the ambulance with, you know, with the staff, and a person was calling 911, but they couldn't speak. Turns out they were in cardiac arrest. They couldn't pinpoint where the address was. Well, they, with his help and knowledge, zeroed in the area. Neighbors helped them find him, and they were able to save this man's life. So we were pretty excited that he was one of our that's a good way to start with the scholarship. So, and we're giving away two this year, you know, so we've been able to double it this year and continue to grow from there.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to wish you nothing but success for this in the coming years. So if you're in Florida, go check out Kirby Family Farms at one of their various events that's open to the public. And I'm sure there are websites and social medias where you can get more information, correct?
Yes, sir. At kirbyfarm.com, KirbyFarm.com. Gives you all the information about us, and thanks for having us.
Absolutely. And, you know, great job you guys do with the kids, helping the community and everything, and of course, providing a nice, scary Halloween event, in addition to the Christmas show and the Wild West shows. So, you know, if you're in the general vicinity of Williston or anywhere get out to Kirby Farms, kirbyfarms.com. Check them out. You know, you're helping a great cause. It is a fully funded or a fully accredited 501c3. Helps the community, and I hear it's pretty darn scary, especially on the train. So, once again, Tim, Daryl, thank you guys for coming to on the Big Scary Show with us down here at CHEC in Ocala, Florida. My name is Drew Badger for the Big Scary Show, and we are out. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the time of the show where we normally find out who would be the winner for our July gruesome giveaway. However, nobody entered the contest this month. So I guess we're just going to have to take this fantastic prize that Screamline Studios donated to us and blow it up. Man, that was a shame. That was a nice one, too. Remember, folks, we will do a giveaway in August, and we hate to blow up our prizes. So please, be sure to enter our contest, because people really do win. And if only one of you had entered, you would have been the winner for this month. Anyway, folks, we'll have another gruesome giveaway come August. Thank you again to Screamline Studios, and sorry about the mess. Visit ScreamlineStudios.com for more. And here we go. Hello, everyone. Drew Badger here. We are live at the Southeastern Halloween Enthusiast Convention down here in Ocala, Florida. We're chatting with a lot of people, seeing a whole bunch of cool things, a lot of home haunters, professional haunters, a lot of resort things going on. It's a whole lot of fun. One of the things you may not consider Halloween-wise when you're coming down to Florida is Legoland, although Legos are as cool as they ever have been. But they do have a Halloween event. It's called Brick or Treat. It's kind of tendered, I would assume, more for the younger folks. But then again, younger folks grow up to be older folks in this industry, and younger folks love Halloween as much as we do in most of the cases. I've got Mercedes Casey here. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You're the senior entertainment person for Legoland, and you hold this thing for the last 6 years called Brick or Treat. What exactly is Brick or Treat for anybody that may be down here traveling through Central Florida or so with children and all that and want to check it out?
Brick or Treat is a weekend event that begins the first weekend of October, and it is geared for kids 2 to 12, as the Legoland Florida Resort is built for kids, and we have a variety of family activities that they can do together. So they can do scavenger hunts together, they can do a competition build together, they can build our mural together, and they can go down our trick-or-treating trail.
And this is one of those things where, you know, you can bring costumes. I know a lot of the big theme parks, they don't allow you to wear costumes or anything like that, but that's actually encouraged here at Brick or Treat.
We do. We encourage the kids to dress up in costume. Their adults can dress up as well. However, we do ask that they don't wear masks. But we also have a whole minifigure category that has its own store where you can dress yourself to be like your favorite minifigure.
And is this a scary event for kids like that? I mean, I know one of the most horrifying things in the world is stepping on a Lego in bare feet. But is there like haunted stuff there or anything like that?
No, we are not that kind of line, brand line. We are more of the family-friendly fun. We have stilt-walking scarecrows. We have Will-O-The-Witch is going to be out this year. We have Groovin' Graveyard, which is a kind of a take on a drumming show, which is a lot of fun. That's probably our darkest thing because it happens to be in an indoor theater, so it happens to be dark. But really, it is geared for the kids to have fun during the daytime building up to Halloween.
Sure, and you know there's Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party and a lot of stuff that's geared to the kids like that, and it just sounds like it's a whole big fun thing. I still think you should have a haunted attraction where you have to walk across a floor laden with Legos and bare feet. That would probably be horrifying more than anything.
That would be. There has been some talk about, because we are on the Cypress Gardens property, there has been some talk in the past about maybe developing the gardens to be a haunt.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, so that might be something in the future. That might be a five-year plan.
Okay, very cool. For people wanting more information about Brick or Treat, maybe you're going to be visiting the Mouse or Harry Potter or anything like that, and you want to come down, but you've also got some young kids, and you know how they can be if you have to wait in lines and everything. How can they get more information about Legoland, Brick or Treat, or anything like that?
They can go onto our Facebook page, or they can go on to Legoland.com, and they can plan their day and plan their visit.
Excellent. Mercedes Casey, a pleasure to have you here at the CHEC, the Southeastern Halloween Enthusiast Convention. My name is Drew Badger for the Big Scary Show, and we are out.
In 1897, Dr. Alexander Hammond arrived at an institution for the criminally insane, only to discover the unsolved murders of several guards.
Drivers, where are we?
Jerry Vane takes you into Black Moon Asylum, a twisted abyss of torment, madness, and the horrifying mystery of Patient 292.
Time for your medication.
Black Moon Asylum, a symphonic journey into darkness from Hunstrumentalist Jerry Vane. Download Black Moon Asylum at jerryvane.com, iTunes, cdbaby.com, Amazon MP3, and your favorite download site.
It's Super Special Correspondent Tater again with my cape. And look, we found Kyle Vest. Kyle, I just airbrushed this model. What do you think of the paint?
Oh my God, what is this?
It's a painted model. Isn't it awesome?
This is the most tragic mess I've ever seen.
What do you mean? It's good.
I can't even tell what's the front and the back. So, this is awful. So, you should quit and give up everything for life.
So what you're saying is stick with fog?
Oh, I don't even know about that.
You're not the first person to tell me that. All right. Well, thanks, Kyle. I guess we have to go take the model and airbrush her out of here. Thanks.
It's showered.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome. Watch out, don't trip over that torso. It's time for Between the Corpses.
Greetings, Haunters. Meathook Jim here. And on this episode of Between the Corpses, I toyed with a couple of different ideas. As many of you may have known from a recent posts this past, last weekend, I was a guest ring announcer for New Ohio Wrestling, which has turned into at least a part-time gig. From what I understand, I get to announce up to 3 matches next time, but hey, it's a start. It's always been a dream of mine to be in the business. And I could sit down here and give you some Between the Corpses on the wrestling business, but I'm not going to do that because I still believe in kayfabe, and there's some things you just don't need to know, and there's some things that enlightened me about the business that I had my suspicions but didn't know for sure. Has it changed my outlook on it a little bit? Sure it has. I'm looking at it on the inside now instead of from the outside. But you know what? I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to talk to you about is something Badger mentioned earlier in the show, which was the lack of entries for the gruesome giveaway. What are you people thinking? I know by looking at the numbers that you guys are listening, the numbers don't lie. The answers are in these questions, and you're talking about a Screamline studio prop in most cases. Serious stuff here, man. I mean, I just got a new shipment in this past week of new fiberglass weapons, and they are realistic as all get out. You know Screamline Studios, you know their work, they're always top-notch. Their Meat Mangler series, the fiberglass now, they are authentic looking. They are real looking. When we ship these things out, and we take them to the local post office, the lady working there kind of freaks out on us because she thinks they're real. And every time we have to explain that these are weapons because they're hesitant to touch a bloody weapon, in case they get fingerprints on the evidence. But, you know, people, the answers are real simple. Just listen to the show. Get the answer and email us, contests@bigscaryshow.com. Somebody's going to win. And these are quality props that will just creep out anybody you approach with them. If you use them as a hand prop in the queue line, or if you use it in the house, wherever you work, you know, if you've got the opportunity to use one of these, take it. I mean, I'm looking at these nice butcher knives we just got in, and machetes. Oh, man, the machetes are amazing. Obviously, doesn't translate well to audio-only podcast, but you can probably see him on the Screamline Studios website. At any rate, Between the Corpses, think about it. Gruesome giveaway. It's the easiest way to get quality, gruesome-looking hand props from our good sponsor at Screamline Studios. So what are you waiting for? Get in on the next one, folks. Win a meat mangler. Freak out people. That's enough for this Between the Corpses. We'll catch you next time.
Passion is what drives us. The passion to be the best. For over 10 years, that passion has taken us from eBay to becoming the driving force in the haunted house industry. And we are just getting started. From flex props to 9-foot giants. Great details, great looks, and great pricing is the foundation we are built on. Our heart beats Halloween and haunts. We are a creepy collection. Let us deliver our passion to your haunted attraction this season. CreepyCollection.com. Now that's creepy.
Here we go. Hello, everyone. Drew Badger here. We are live at CHEC in Ocala, Florida, and hadn't seen this guy for a couple of years. Every time I'm down in Florida, he seems to show up at all the conventions that I do. He is a professional stilt walker costume designer, does a lot of cool things. They call him the Dark Walker, I believe, or the Dark Stilter. Steve Yawn from the Newberry Corn Maze. How you doing, man?
Doing good.
You've been walking around here with a bunch of different costumes and horrifying some of the people around here and all this. How did you get started as a professional, quote-unquote, stilt walker?
I did that from having fun watching the guys at Universal Studios.
And you just wanted to see if you could do it yourself?
I saw them doing it, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And that's where it went from there.
You know, I'm an old guy and I'm a heavy guy, you know, I don't think I could ever do that, but how good a shape or how much difficulty is it to actually learn to walk on a pair of stilts like that? I've seen folks around of various ages and sizes able to do this. Is this something like you need a really good sense of balance to do, or just how dangerous it is? It looks like if you slipped, you're basically, it's a long way to the ground.
Basically, as long as you have a good balance, you will be able to stilt walk. It's just a matter of practicing and trying it out yourself to see if you have the good balance. Mm-hmm. Not everybody can do it, but there are a lot of people that can do it. So,
yeah, unfortunately, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have some nice scars to prove that they can't do it. I'd probably be covered in them if I tried.
You'll find out real quick if you can't do it, yes.
So I've walked past your booth here, and you've got a lot of masks, you've got a lot of costumes, you've got a lot of stuff. Is a lot of the stuff you've made yourself? I mean, obviously the silicon masks are CFX and Immortals and some other stuff, but you've also got, you know, just a lot of different things there.
It's 50-50. I mean, most of the masks are Immortal and composite effects, but the hands and the clothing and stuff, I will make my own pants and different clothes and dress different things up. The pants are about 6 yards of material. Wow. If you believe that. I mean, it's a lot of material. And it adds up. Weight-wise, you try and keep stuff as light as possible, of course.
Sure.
But other than that, I mean, I probably have over 100 costumes now.
Wow.
And probably around 30, 35 silicone masks.
And you don't just use these for Halloween. Obviously, you've brought out some of the scarier stuff here, but you do this year-round.
This is what I do year-round. So I work anything from parades, grand openings, stadiums, fairs, Renaissance fairs, anything like that. I mean...
And what is it that the kids or anything like that do when they see you? Do they go running? Do they try to knock you over? What are some of the good and cool things and or maybe negative things that happen as a stilt walker?
The type of stilt that I wear allows me to stand still, so it's 50-50. People think sometimes I'm a prop. Sometimes they don't know. So they'll walk up to me and get pictures, and once I move, then... then it's on. I mean, they can either run or sometimes they cry. I mean, you learn how to deal with different people just from doing it for so long.
Sounds like it's a very interesting thing. And again, you know, I I know it's something I couldn't do. For people wanting more information, maybe you can hire you for, you know, their next upcoming event or something like that. Is there a website or social media where people can get more information? Or where they can see you hanging around in October?
Look me up on Facebook under Dark Stilter. And I do have a Facebook page under my name too, Steve Yon. And you can also contact me or text me. I do have my phone number and stuff on the site.
Excellent.
So if you need to get in touch with me or email me, my email is on there as well.
Excellent. So if you're looking for a stilt walker for one of your events, maybe hire you out to come for some kind of special thing you've got going on, check out Steve Yon here. He's one of the better ones I've ever seen out there, and he's got a lot of different costumes for almost any occasion. Steve, a pleasure to have you here on the Big Scary Show.
Thank you, sir.
And my name is Drew Badger, down here in Ocala, Florida at SeaHack, and we are out.
Virgil Franklin and Mark Strait, The Haunted, a Big Scary Show exclusive.
Haunted House owners, actors, and enthusiasts, join the new Ohio Haunters Association. We are working with haunters across the state
from home to pro to strengthen the Ohio haunt community. Open to all owners, actors, makeup artists, prop builders, designers, and Halloween paranormal enthusiasts. The Ohio Haunters Association, where haunting is the heart of it all. Look for us on Facebook.
Well, it's super special correspondent Tater again with my cape. I guess other careers aren't going to pan out, so I guess I should probably stick to fog sales. So. Now, if excuse me, I got a cape to wear and some whooshing noises to make. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
As we slide back into the swamp where we hid the body, we would like to thank the following sponsors. Screamline Studios, Dark Imaginings, Von Caron Productions, Haunt Pay, Ticket Leap, and Creepy Collection. We would also like to thank Virgil Franklin, Master of the Ether Muse, as well as the Fordga hosts, including Storm, Rants and More, HauntMinute.com, The Unknown Scare Actor, Actor Trainer and Traveling Actor Troupe. For more information, check out MaulMonsters.com. That's MaulMonsters.com. Drew Badger, Actor Trainer and Consultant. Find out more at RabbitBadger.org. And Jerry Vane, the Hauntstrumentalist, for all your heavy metal and haunt needs. JerryVane.com. And finally, you, the listener. Without you, we are nothing.
The Big Scary Show is copyright Big Scary Show LLC, and no rebroadcast of this show may be made without express permission of the owners. All music used on The Big Scary Show is used with expressed permission of the artists themselves.